Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. Happy Cinco de Mayo. If you're an American celebrating this holiday, I just want to tell you that makes no sense whatsoever. And here to talk about that is Master Sommelier Sabato Segaria. He was a cast member in every wine film I've directed and probably one of my best friends in the wine world. He worked at a company called Bar Taco, and they made millions of margaritas. Today, we're going to talk about the origin of Cinco de Mayo, the origin of the margarita, and all of the trouble tequila has gotten us into. But before that, this is a massive week for SOM TV. This Thursday, May 7th, we launch our first major original motion picture film, The Delicacy. It's a film that follows a bunch of sea urchin divers off the coast of Santa Barbara. It was filmed for 7 years on film, not video. It is a wildly ambitious project. And we have a 7-day trial on SOM TV right now, so there's no excuse not to give this film a try, give the network a try, all sorts of wine education content, everything. That's at somtv.com, and then you can sign into almost any major device worldwide, watching your smart TV, your iPad, everything else. So without further ado, get your margaritas ready, and let's talk to Sabato Segaria. All right, it's good to be with you, Sab.
Great to be with you. Happy Cinco de Mayo, Jason.
Happy Cinco de Mayo. This is a pretty maligned holiday, in a way that it's kind of like St. Patrick's Day. I don't think anybody really thinks about
who St. Patrick's is or who St. Patrick was, and is he still around?
He made a shamrock shake at McDonald's. I don't know if you know this.
Anyways, of my favorites, yeah.
We'll deal with that holiday on a different time, but can you possibly, as a master sommelier, a heavy drinker, beautiful man, can you explain to me what is this holiday? Where did it come from?
I prefer professional enabler myself. But so where the holiday came from. So I know where it came from, but I don't know really how it got to where we are now. So everyone thinks it's Mexican Independence Day. That's September 16th, which should be celebrated. I don't know why we don't celebrate both of them. But for some reason, we latched on to Cinco de Mayo. And Cinco de Mayo was May 5th, 1862. And that was actually the Battle of Puebla. And Puebla, the town that's about 120 kilometers, I think, southeast of Mexico City. And it was basically the Mexican government was really struggling financially and was potentially going bankrupt. And so they said that we're not going to pay any debts that we owe to any other countries. And that didn't go so well when France, Spain, and Britain heard about that. So they sent their cavalries over, and they were able to negotiate with the British and with the Spaniards. And so they went back home. But the French, they had this little guy named Napoleon, and I think he had a Napoleon complex. I think he was actually the first person to have a Napoleon complex.
Ever.
Ever. This was Napoleon III, so I don't know if maybe there are two other people that had Napoleon complexes before him. But needless to say, he saw it as an opportunity to create a second sort of form of the Mexican government and make it more French-friendly. So battles ensued, and they had this Battle of Puebla. And the French came in, I think they had about 6,000 troops. The Mexican army was there, and they had 2,000 troops. They were scrappier. They fought through it, started in the morning, battle ended in the evening, and the French lost. And that was really brought back a lot of pride to Mexico. It was the first time the French had been defeated in, I think, 50 years. And so that was reason for them to celebrate. But why we're still celebrating that here in the United States is a question, but not one that we should question too much, because it means that we get to drink margaritas on May 5th, regardless of what day of the week it falls on.
I think the moral of the story is don't pay your debts, maybe.
Let's see how that works out. Let me know, and let me know what day I need to celebrate, and I'll celebrate you. Yeah.
Sounds good. Well, so now we have we have college students everywhere and everybody drinking. It sounds to me like this is I think it's widely known the beer companies kind of came in and really were pretty damn smart.
Yeah.
But you and I are, especially you, big margarita fans.
Big margarita fans.
This is the day, right? I mean, this is the day we drink margaritas.
One of the days.
How many? One of the days, yes. So the drink the margarita, I think that's something we should at least talk about. Where did this drink come from? Do you know?
I don't have specific knowledge. It's one of those, there's a lot of folklore when it comes to the history of cocktails. And there's the romantic one, and then there's sort of how it came to be that everybody will argue about. But I think The one that resonates the most is, I think it was in like 1938, there was this bartender down in Tijuana, and his name was Danny Herrera. And Danny had this regular, and I believe she was a dancer of some sort, and she loved tequila, but she couldn't drink it neat. And so he said, well, let me come up with something that I think you'll like. And so he looked to the traditional shot with a lime and salt for inspiration, and he came up with the margarita that was so much more refreshing than just the shot itself. And then it spread wide and far. Now, if you look from, talk to cocktail historians, before that, there was a cocktail called the Daisy. Margarita means daisy in Spanish, and it's a very similar cocktail, except I believe they use brandy in that. And this is one of those things where maybe it was a classic cocktail that he had served before, the Daisy, and he said, well, she wants tequila. Let me put tequila in here. That's what we are known for in our country. And it took off, and that's how the margarita was born. So that's what I'm sticking with.
I mean, that's not, you know, it's just not the oldest drink in the world. It's just pretty much, you know, Danny Herrera, you're talking, what, 50s, 40s?
So 1938, I think, is when it was. So at that point, I mean, I'd imagine he was older. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they certainly marketed the hell out of this damn thing. I mean, yeah, I can't think of a single cocktail that I have had that is more iconic in my life. I mean, it would be the most iconic from the beginning of my ability to drink to now. You know, I've had all sorts of
outside
weird,
of the Cosmo
strange, and the Appletini. Those okay. are the two big guys for me. But I would say the margarita is it spans the mm-hmm. gamut. You can walk into drinking mm-hmm. your first drink, and you can be 75, and you're still going to want a margarita. It's a very strange thing.
I can't wait till the cocktail historians 100 years from now are trying to figure out how an Appletini was created, or an espresso martini, and like the folklore that will be behind that.
And they find out it was all from you, which is going to be interesting. I will make sure that I can get all of this properly archived.
Let's do that podcast. So that'll be in the archives of the Smithsonian somewhere. And I'll take credit for that.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I think the espresso martini was created. You heard it right here, guys. Sabato Sicario. You know, the main ingredient in this is tequila. I mean, mm-hmm. it's obviously limes, but mm-hmm. tequila. And I want to talk about tequila itself. Mm-hmm. A lot of people understand tequila, but they don't understand the mechanics of it, how important it is to a region. Mm-hmm. And then I guess how important it is to you as a person, a mm-hmm. drinker, a master somm, a restaurateur. Where do we start
yeah.
on this spirit?
Great question. I like to call it vitamin T. And I'm sitting here looking at my margarita. I'm like, okay, it's got vitamin T in it. And it's got citrus, so I'm not going to get scurvy. And if it has vitamins in it, it's probably good for me.
So you basically, it's a good sailor's drink.
Exactly.
You can be drunk all the time
exactly.
and you won't get scurvy.
So okay. I have a very intimate relationship with tequila. And I guess we can go back to the beginning. And I think we've all had this sort of trajectory to a relationship with tequila over the years. But mine was Columbus, Ohio. And this would have been around, that was my senior year in high school. And, you know, classic story, friend's parents out of town, and what do they have in their liquor cabinet? So we found tequila. And to this day, I can vividly remember the label. I had this, like, ghastly kind of recollection, like seeing a ghost almost. I remember when I was doing inventory at a bar back in my days. And it was Herradura Añejo. And remember the bottle, the amber color. And
that's not bad stuff.
No, it wasn't. But how we handled it was not worthy of the tequila. So you remember those plastic cups that they were like the coffee cups that came in like the, you know, Roy G. Biv colors that had the big handle that had the sort of the dimple in it all around? Just smile and nod your head, say yes, you do. It was like,
wait, are you talking? You're not talking like Solo cups. You're talking about
yeah, like your parents would drink coffee out of them in the morning, and they were just, but they were plastic anyway.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. They're you don't even see those things anymore.
No,
that's like a very old school Midwest thing. I don't.
You're from Ohio, so okay. I figured you might know that.
I am, and yeah, my parents were not wealthy, so we drank out of those kind of things.
So we had that, and so we got the tequila out, and then we got a couple of those cups out. I think mine was purple, and no, it was blue.
They stack up on top of each
other.
Yes,
exactly, yeah. And yeah. So we're like, okay, great. What do we mix this with? Look in the fridge. What do we have? We have grape juice. Okay. Grape juice and tequila. That sounds great.
Oh, God.
And what's the proportion? I don't know. Let's start with 50-50 and we can work back from there. So there we were.
How old are you here? How old are you?
17. Okay. 17. And mixology hadn't become a thing at that point in time, really. So there we are drinking out of these plastic coffee cups, Herradura and Yeho on the rocks with grape juice, 50-50. Obviously, you can probably figure out how that story ended. And took me a while to overcome tequila. But now it's one of my favorite spirits out there. And I think it's for a number of reasons. Like, to me, vodka is too neutral. Tequila has, I don't know what it is, but it's uplifting. I think, I don't know if this is folklore or not, but I believe agave is a stimulant.
Well, that's true. So here's, I can actually, because okay. we have something coming on Mezcal for Some TV, and we've been diving deep into this. Mm-hmm. So yes, agave is a stimulant, but the problem is the minute you make it into alcohol, alcohol's a depressant. So yes, one is true, but it's very tough to say once it's been distilled that it's still
okay.
has the qualities.
Got it.
But I was spreading this like, hey, you guys, it's a stimulant. Mm-hmm. But...
Well, we had this cocktail in Aspen. I don't know if Jay Fletcher came up with it or Richard Betts, but we called it the defibrillator. And it was a shot of tequila and a shot of espresso. And everybody has their own. Do you take the espresso first? Do you take the tequila first? But that was the way to kind of, okay, I need a little pick-me-up. And
right.
That's,
well, we used to, when I bartended or when I served, there was always Mexican coffee, which would just be like instead of Irish whiskey, you would just put tequila. I'll be honest though, that's you need espresso sounds a lot better
yeah.
because with thin American coffee and tequila, you might as well just have a tequila.
I thought you meant like you took your Folgers and you poured tequila over the crystals and stirred it up there.
I've probably done stupid yeah. things like that with tequila. I mean, tequila is one of those alcohols that I think everybody, maybe not as much as gin, mm-hmm. but I think it would be second place for the one that everybody has this taste aversion where it's like, I got sick on this. I did something stupid. I kissed somebody I shouldn't have. I puked in a car. You know, whatever these stories are that I'm sure only you and I have.
Yeah, yeah, like tequila should come with bail money up until a certain age. And then, okay, you're responsible enough to consume tequila without having to get into trouble.
Right. Well, the truth is, first of all, you're breaking the law, Sabato. You're 17. This is your own fault. But talk to me about the levels of tequila. I mean, how deep does it go as far as a quality level?
Oh, I mean, there's everything from the stuff you clean the floors with to some really great stuff. And this was what was awesome. 2 years ago, I was the president of Bar Taco. And obviously, you can imagine with that, we served a lot of tequila. I think we did the math once. I think we served like 3 million margaritas a year, I think is what it was. Don't quote me on that. But we served a lot of them.
Regardless, I'm sure a ton.
And that was like basically 80% of our liquor sales. So I wanted to take our teams to the source so they could understand where it was and the nuances of it. And we went to Oaxaca and visited some Mezcal distilleries as well. And that was pretty fascinating for me. You know, I hadn't traveled to wine regions in a while, and it relit that spark for me as we went to the different distilleries and we saw everything from the bigger ones to the smaller producers and how they used the autoclave and some that didn't and how they distilled it. And, you know, seeing for a lot of it was really great. What I loved was seeing my team go in there, and a lot of them had never been to a distillery. Many had never been to Mexico. None of them had been to Mexico. And some had never even been out of the U.S. And so walking into a distillery, and we started in visiting the tequila producers and see the big, shiny, silver stainless steel tanks. And everyone's like, wow. And then you see the smaller producers and artisanal. And then when we took them over to Oaxaca, that was like, oh, holy shit, what is this? Because there you are. You're in all these shiny, you know, factories of distillation, and then you go into this place where there's a pickup truck with three tires, there's a three-legged dog, and you got this donkey that's going around in someone's backyard. It looks like an above-ground pool, and they're basically distilling it, and they saw that and were like, wow, this was just seeing the light bulb go off. and tasting the different types of agave side by side was even eye-opening for me, and I saw more of the similarities with wine than ever before as you taste the different species of agave that they use. And it was delicious and fun.
So I think mezcal, and I'm going to be honest here, I'm not an expert like you. I am, but as a person who's been in the world, I can tell you I've drank a lot. Mm-hmm. And mezcal is my favorite spirit. Mm-hmm. It really is. But I should ask you as a professional, mm-hmm. how is it that after you distill, how can mezcal have so many unique characters? First, what is the difference between mezcal and tequila?
Great. So
let's start there because I want to talk about mezcal. Yeah. It's my favorite stuff.
So all tequila is mezcal, but not all mezcal is tequila. It's distilled from, they're both distilled from agave, but the regions of where they come from, with tequila being the name of a town within the state of Jalisco. And I believe there's like five states that tequila can come from. And traditionally tequila uses blue agave. Blue agave can be cultivated. And what they'll do is they will actually steam the piñas, the hearts of the agave, and then they will distill it. When you're dealing with the mezcal, that's a whole different beast because you have some species, espadine, we'll say, is probably the most prolific and the one that you see the most often that can be cultivated. But then you have others. Tepestache is my favorite, but that's one that grows wild and it takes 20 years for these plants to grow. And it's almost like truffle hunters where they're like walking through the hills of Mexico and they'll tie little strings around the agave that they will mark and they will watch them for years. And then they will harvest them. And instead of steaming them, they actually roast them over open pits. And they'll dig these holes. They'll light on the bottom of it. And then they'll put the piñas in there. And then they'll put stones over the top. And so it roasts it. And so the biggest difference, it's almost like looking at there's whiskey and there's scotch whiskey. And tequila would be the whiskey that's much cleaner. But then scotch whiskey is really peaty and smoky. And that's what mezcal is. I love mezcal, and I don't drink Bloody Marys with vodka. It's too watery. But when I put mezcal in there, I love it because it has like, there's almost like adds viscosity, but also that smokiness, like you charred all the vegetables that are in there. And it's one of my favorite things to drink at brunch. But yeah, mezcal is so much more artisanal, and you have all these mezcaleros who are, you know, distilling in these small neighborhoods, small production. And we went to see this one guy, and I remember he pulled out a sample of it and he blew bubbles into it. And by blowing bubbles in it and how they dissipated, he could actually tell the alcohol content of that. Without it, there was no place, there was no lab anywhere to be seen around here, but he could tell what the alcohol content was just by doing that. And it was really seeing the artisan craft of it was really special.
That's amazing. So when you look at these strains that you can't farm, and they are sort of just like you said, you have to forage for them, Tobala and all these other ones. Why is it that you can't farm certain strains of, do you know why you can't farm these things? The agaves, why do they have to just be found? How come you can't put them in rows and grow them?
I don't know completely, but when you think about mushrooms that you can't grow, like you have some that you can cultivate, shiitakes, portobellos, but when it comes to other mushrooms, you know, porcinis, truffles, morels, chanterelles, like those can't be cultivated. So I'm not sure why these species grow wild. But there's also the talking to some producers there, they won't make some of those because they don't want them to go extinct. They're trying to preserve them rather than put them into extinction. And that's kind of interesting because when you look at the boom that mezcal has had, let's say the past 10 years, and you see how small production that is, you could really see a shortage in the near future if the consumption keeps on growing at the rate that it is. You know, pechuga, for example, it's interesting. Like pechuga, that's the one where they would use it for celebrations.
They use meat, right?
Celebrations and holidays. It's like a very special occasion, mezcal. And they will traditionally put like a chicken breast over there. There's lots of spices and fruits that are distilled in there. And I think Del Maguey did one with Iberico ham, and they've done some with lamb and different types. But that was a special occasion one. And we love great marketing here in the U.S. And so now people drink pechuga, you know, all the time. So now they're producing more pechuga than they ever have before. But that's one of those things where, wow, the market's catching on. But when you look at, there's no real major large infrastructure for mezcal production. So it'll be interesting to see how that grows and evolves over the coming years.
it's amazing to think liquor is like any kind of seafood. You know, it has to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
You can't physically, you know, you can harvest abalone as long as you want, but eventually they go extinct because mm-hmm. their life cycle reproduction is very mm-hmm. different than the demand to eat them. And if you think about the liquor you're drinking, you know, Tobola as being these very, you know, not tiny, but mm-hmm. smaller agave mm-hmm. that can only grow wild. If you turn a bunch of, you know, cocktail drinkers and college students and, you know, it's not necessarily their fault. I'm just saying mm-hmm. that when you turn that on, maybe it's in a movie, maybe it's whatever, it could go extinct. It's you don't think of liquor that way. You don't think of it because you think of barley and wheat and things you can grow.
Imagine if Chenin Blanc was a wild grape variety, not one that could be cultivated. And if you were to look at where Chenin Blanc was on the scene 10 years ago, and now how many people love that, but know that when you harvest it, then it takes, you know, longer than normal to replenish itself, we could be extinct of that. And that's just one of those trends that caught on the wine world. Obviously, Chenin Blanc can be cultivated, but if it was a wild grape variety, how that would be, and you know that all the sommeliers would be, oh, this is amazing, this is a wild variety, but we have the potential to deplete the entire planet's supply of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's just we really absolutely have to think more. And, you know, thinking about the environment is not a, you know, this is not a hip, though I'm happy it is, mm-hmm. trend. This is just a straight up fact. If you enjoy drinking this mm-hmm. stuff, you have to think about the yeah. environment. You just have to.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it is. So when you think about vodka, I've read some things recently that vodka, the way it's distilled, it's a lot of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the top shelf vodkas are not exactly, they're not leaps and bounds above, and sometimes chemically they're mm-hmm. not above at all.
I mean, vodkas. I only drink vodka that's been triple distilled through Moonrock. And,
okay.
yeah. and then that's sealed with the hoofs of unicorns.
Well, the problem is unicorn sustainability is an issue we don't have time for in this podcast. But I would say, like, when it comes to tequila, how is one better than the other, aside from the fact that, okay, maybe where it comes from is rarer. But from a taste standpoint, what is it that makes one more expensive, better? You happen to have spent a lot of time mm-hmm. justifying that you have a good palate. You took this master sommelier exam. You've worked at restaurants. If you can't answer this, I don't know what to do.
I mean, when I called tequila in my blind tasting 3 times in a row.
every white wine.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So why are they all different?
Why are they better? What's the scale? Like, what's the better scale? Is it the quality of water? Because I've read with vodka, it's basically how good's the water? Once you distill to a certain point, and then you add water back, that's kind of, it. There's a,
I mean, so tequila, there's lots of nuances that they, why they taste different. And whether it's like the horno that they would roast it in or the autoclave where they steam it in like the ovens that they use there, that's one thing. But I think the biggest thing in terms of price that you see, it's marketing. And what was fascinating is talking to producers there about brands that we see on back bars in the United States that never even hit the Mexican market. And literally, it's somebody saying, oh, I'm going to buy this. I'm going to Americanize this, and I'm going to put a lot of oak on it for Reposado or Añejo, and it's going to be something that's going to be, it's dreamed up at a marketing, around a marketing table, and put out to the market, and it hits big. And when you see the dollars that are associated with the transactions when Patron sold, or when George Clooney and Randy Gerber sold Casamigos, it draws a lot of interest from other people, specifically the big liquor companies. It says, wow, how do we go in here? How do we build a brand that's almost like a lifestyle brand and capitalize on that? I mean, Patron, you know, you sometimes have distilleries that will distill for a number of different producers. So it's almost like a co-op of sorts or a custom crush facility. And that's where Patron initially started. Obviously, it outgrew that. That space, and now they have their own. But that bottle was a unique bottle to hit the market, and it's an iconic bottle when you look at a back bar. That adds value in the eyes of the consumer in one way or another. So just like vodka is a marketed beverage, so is tequila.
Yeah. No, that makes an awful lot of sense. I just wonder, from your standpoint, where do you find value in tequila? I know you drink a lot of silver because mm-hmm. obviously the same with wine, the oak is not masking things, I suppose. But how do you find, like, I'm going to spend $70 on a bottle or $50. How much do you spend as a professional on tequila? What's tequila worth?
I'm fortunate. I'm looking at my bar cart right now, and this is something we're talking. We're in quarantine here in New York still, and I have all these samples that I've amassed of tequila over the years, and so it's been fun to play with different cocktails. Traditionally, I would say in terms of in that $30 to $45 range is probably the sweet spot of tequilas. And most often it's silver, although one of my favorite types is Hoven. And that's sort of a blend of the Reposado and silver. So you get the body and weight from Hoven, but you don't get from Reposado, but you don't get the overly oak influence. And to me, that's one that I really like, and I think it's great for mixing in cocktails. You know, as I'm talking about that, another style or profile that we didn't mention, but when I was down in Mexico that I was introduced to was the Cristalino category. And so this is basically, they make an añejo or Reposado, and they strip out the color from it. So it's clear, but it has that body and weight from it. And I think...
How do they do that? Do they like fine it like wine? They
just I don't know the exact characteristics of it, but it's like you can... just like rum, for example, how they distill the rum, but they want Bacardi silver to be silver, and they can strip all the color out of it. And so you see that on the rum side of things. I think Casa Dragones is probably one of the... they don't really market it that way, but I believe they are... in that Cristalino category. And then there's other producers that have come out at Cristalinos, and this is the high-end luxury tequila experience in that sense.
And it's worth it. You think that's...
some people do. That's not necessarily the style that I like. I mean, I prefer to use it for mixing. And when it gets to añejos and when it gets to extra añejos, I don't have a lot of purpose to consume those at home, but I have been playing with those, and I love mixing tequila into other cocktails. And so one of my favorites was, I would call it a Ernesto and Jalisco, and it was a Hemingway daiquiri that would sub out tequila. And when I go to Jimmy's in Aspen, I'd say, I need an Ernesto and Jalisco. And it was a Hemingway daiquiri that had that, and I just loved it because it had more character, more body and depth to it. But now with these extra añejos and these añejos that I have at home, I've been trying to substitute them where you have rum or bourbon or whiskey in cocktails. And so whether it's an old fashioned made with those, whether it's a Manhattan, even Negronis with those, they're pretty damn delicious.
That's amazing. What other uses for tequila aside from just shooting it when you're 17?
I have also actually cured salmon with it. And so just like in Scandinavia, they'll use aquavit to help cure the salmon. So taking some tequila, taking some citrus zest and salt, and it's almost like a margarita cure that you put on salmon and make gravlax, and that's pretty delicious as well.
Fantastic.
How do you drink it? How do you do it?
You know, I've become very, very snobby when it comes to tequila in a weird way that I just don't have to drink stuff I don't want to. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I have money. It's because I just, you know, when you start to find out, you know, the more you know, the more you don't know, the more I realize, like, A, if I'm not trying something new, I want to try something I liked. And that's just how it goes. Mm-hmm. So I found myself with mezcal and margaritas and kind of that smoky stuff. Mm-hmm. I truly, truly love that. Mm-hmm. I think I like – mezcal is one of the few drinks like this that I will just drink straight. I mm-hmm. like scotch a lot. Mm-hmm. But basically, you're talking about some really old rums – scotch and mezcal mm-hmm. are the only ones that I will put in a snifter. I will mm-hmm. drink. I will watch a movie. And I think mezcal is one of the very few drinks. Tequila, I don't have this with. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a regular tequila where I will just drink it to enjoy it. Yeah. And it's one for a night. Mm-hmm. How do I drink it? I mean, I can definitely drink, you know, your 50-50 mix you're talking about.
Yeah.
I can do that, you know, as far as, but
with
I
grape
would
juice?
Probably not
grape
use grape juice.
What varietal
no,
do
I would
you
probably,
use?
I would probably use mezcal and lime juice yeah. and that type of a thing, and I could very easily
yeah.
do something like that. I mean, orange juice, honestly, I think a lot of juice does very well with tequila.
Citrus,
I don't know
yeah.
grape juice.
No, no.
I don't know
no.
about grape
By the
juice.
Way, that was I forgot to mention, it was of the Welch's varietal. That's what it was
oh, yes.
used back then.
Not Vitis vinifera.
No, one thing that this is another quarantine hack that I came up with, and I'm sure there's going to be purists that are going to scold me for this, but I was reading something that Dave Wondrich had written about. They have these infinity bottles of scotch. Have you heard about these?
No.
So
sounds dangerous.
But so people will almost do like their house blend. And so they have a little bit left in a bottle. It's almost like a Solera system. And so they'll pour in the last bit of a scotch at home, and then they'll write on the label what it is, and they'll keep on topping it up, and that becomes their house blend that they have. And I found that I had a lot of sort of partial bottles of Reposado and Añejo and Silver, and so I sort of made my own Hoven by blending that together, and so put the little infinity symbol on the back of it. And I used that for margaritas the other night with friends. We're like, we did like the Pepsi challenge. Like, okay, let's try them with Silver. Let's try them with Reposado. And let's try them with this Infinity bottle. And everyone loved the Infinity bottle. It had sort of the best of both worlds. Then I showed them what it was. But that was something that's kind of cool. And like, great, I got no skin in the game with this. I'm not going to drink these neat. I'm probably going to mix them with something. So why not put them all together and give it a go?
I think you and I need to get out of quarantine, and we need to drink. The last time I had I've had a few margaritas with you, but it's time to do it again. I appreciate this very much.
This was a lot of fun. It was, instead of me drinking a margarita by myself on Cinco de Mayo, I got to share one with you. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it more. Mm-hmm. Well, you be safe, my friend. And I am looking forward to, what's our next drink? We're doing a podcast about the espresso martini. So I look forward to that.
I got to go work on my espresso machine here. Yeah, I'll be right back.
Invented by Sabato Sigaria at 17 years old. It's going to be a wicked story. All right, man. I love you. Cheers.
All right. Cheers. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Happy Cinco de Mayo. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Don't forget, go to SomTV.com, where we have a 7-day free trial to try out SomTV. The Delixy releasing this Thursday, May 7th. Also, our blind tasting card game is up for pre-order at blindersgame.com. And then last thing is, please be safe. Please be nice to people under quarantine. And if you are out of work with the service industry, please let us know. Private message us on Instagram, Twitter, wherever else, and we'll make sure you have a subscription. All right. Be safe, everybody. See you next time.